is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kia Ora Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, Season 15, Episode 2. We had a top three that was, some might have predicted, but nobody on Absolute Rally did. So we thought we'd get everybody in and chastise them repeatedly about getting their predictions wrong. But what would you expect? We never get them right. I'll say hello on my right. Hello, Jackie Boy Banyan.
Hello, Tony Simpson. Have you stopped choking now?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
Good.
And I'll say hello in the middle, Ryan Champion.
Hello.
A cheeky smile. And last but not least, hello, Trevor Agnew.
Hello, boys. How are we all doing?
We're all good. We're all good. I think we're slightly wired because we've had probably too much coffee. I think that's what Jack was alluding to before we started recording. But I wanted to get straight down to the brass tacks of this, boys. Right. Now, I'm gonna use Jack's paper as a point of reference for this. Right. Jack, I don't expect you to quote from it verbatim or anything like that, but front page, MN today, which is fantastic. Meek, this is the best WRC car yet. And my question to you, the picture above it is Sebastian Ogier winning in a Citroen. Discuss. Okay, don't discuss then.
What do you want me to discuss?
Well, don't go silent on me like that, Jack, because that causes me stress.
Well, I might have turned my microphone off by accident there.
You turn your microphone off by accident. Okay, fair dues, fair dues. I'm slightly conflicted by I'm really pleased we've got Seb Marshall's on the program next week actually, so we're going to talk to Seb. I've had some messages back and forth about the power stage, but I want to talk about obviously we had Citroën winning. I think Chris was quite vocal about, you know, it's the best world car he's been in since the DS3, etc., and yet the C3 that he never was quite at home with, this Sebastian Ogier winning first time out in it.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I think what we've got there is Sebastian Ogier is obviously very specialist on the Monte Carlo Rally, knows it very well, and has been very successful on that event before. And also, we had a Monte which, although it did feature snow and ice, we had lots of dry sections, which the C3 has been particularly good in. And I think Chris didn't. I think he got the short end of the stick in the sense that when he was sacked by Citroën, they were in the middle of making some proper improvements to that car, and it did improve towards the end of that year. So we'll never really know what Chris could have done with the car later in the year, because obviously he was sacked. But I think Citroën have made some step forwards. We got a good, you know, a good view of what the C3 is like on dry tarmac, which to be honest, we've seen before. And I think it's way too early to read into the rest of the season based on what we've seen in Monte because of those reasons, really.
Ryan Champion, we all got predictions pretty much wrong. Oh, hang on a minute. The police have turned up at Ryan Champion's place. I don't know what that was. Maybe we shouldn't ask. Were you surprised, Ryan, with regards to the winner? I know we always flippantly try and do top threes and stuff like that, but did you see Ogier winning first time out?
What was my prediction?
Your prediction was Ogier winning first time out.
So was mine.
And Trevor's, yeah, but Trevor only went for the winner, didn't he?
He did. He bottled it. But, you know, listen, in all seriousness, we never try and take the predictions too serious, because we're all taking a punt. What is going on? Ryan Champion, are you okay?
I'm doing okay, thanks. It was my disc drive decided to wake up, and that was
definitely
it ejecting
sounded
the
like
disc.
It got teasered.
So Ryan Champion still got a disc drive?
I've got a DVD drive in my laptop. I have.
Is it floppy?
That sounded like Ezra Pekalapi's Citroën.
Yeah, it did. We're going to talk about that in a bit, actually. But Ryan Champion, just going back to the point that we were making about Citroën, you predicted Sebastian Ogier, of course, and so did Trev and everything else. Yeah, kudos to the pair here. But did you genuinely believe it, or did you just go with it's the favourite, it's his home event and everything else? Did you really think the car was going to be up to it?
I'm glad you reminded me there was a point to this conversation.
Yeah.
I did. I did genuinely believe it, because it's Sebastian Ogier, and we saw it when he moved to M Sport. And unfortunately, we've seen the opposite now. He's moved away from M Sport. I'm sure we'll come on to that in a while. But you just cannot underestimate the Ogier effect. And as Jack's already said, it's a rally he knows very well. It's a rally he's very successful on. And you know, the car worked okay on tarmac. We saw the car be very fast on tarmac. We saw Chris Meek be very fast in Monte Carlo last year. So it wasn't unexpected. The only thing is you do have to feel for Thierry Neuville yet again. I hope these defeats by Sébastien Ogier do make him stronger, and eventually he comes good because of it. Because from his side, it must be frustrating to be beaten just by that little bit again, especially after the overshoot he had. But Ogier, he's gone to Citroën, and he's done the same as what he did when he went to M Sport. He's taken his brilliance there. He's won this rally, but I think from what we saw from other teams, and as Jack's already alluded to, it's far from a foregone conclusion what's going to happen for the rest of the season. But I think this one went to form.
I, you know what, and I'll come to you, Trev, on this. I just following on what Ryan has said there about Thierry. I've seen some stage ends where Thierry was kind of quite comfortable with the fact that this is Sebastian's home event. I've gone as hard as I'm prepared to go. The drive over the Torino was phenomenal from Thierry.
Yeah, he I don't know. If you think of Ogier and you heard it in his interviews, you cannot go 100% absolutely flat out in Monte Carlo. You have to have a little bit in reserve. And I think maybe Thierry had that this time, apart from that one small mistake. So he's happy with his pace. The smile at the end of, was it the first day proper? It was just brilliant. When he's being interviewed, I think it was the last stage, either the first proper day, the end of the second proper day, and I think he was okay. You know, he clearly would have wanted to win, but he didn't want to push that much to jeopardize the points and starting off with a good haul of points in this one. And you know, maybe he had it in his head, right? If I can finish second this one, that's it, and I'll still have a go. But you know, I'm not going to do anything stupid.
Jack, he spoke about being more aggressive. There's more aggression supposedly coming from Hyundai. Did you pick up anything on that?
I think his tyre choice on the first day was pretty aggressive, wasn't it? He went different to everybody else and really kind of dropped himself in it there, really, to a certain extent, because, I mean, you never know what everyone else is going to take, but to me, the tyre choice looked pretty straightforward from where I was sat, and that's backed up by the fact that pretty much every car went with a similar kind of setup and Nerva went a bit different. So, yeah, I saw that aggression in strategy for sure, trying to do something a bit different and trying to shake up the order. So yeah, a little bit of that in his driving. I thought there was some spectacular stages in there, but I think there's only so hard you can drive on some of the conditions that we had there with the ice and stuff. You can only go so fast and trust your car so much. And I think a couple of years ago it might have been playing in his mind when he went off and bits like that. So I think, you know, he knew he had to get through and score some good points on this event, especially when Sébastien Ogier was doing so well. And I think he knows, I think he knows in the back of his mind, whatever Sébastien Ogier is driving, he's going to be fine for the championship, so he needs to take the points where he can get them and not push too hard.
I'd like to, you know, the tyre choice there, which Jack just mentioned, I want to talk to both of you about this one, Ryan and Trev. Ryan, when you seen that tyre choice, did you think that was either, was it going to be a stroke of genius, or could it be something that really bit him on the backside? I don't think it really did bite him on the backside. I thought it could have been quite easily seen as a stroke of genius and giving him that little bit more that all the other drivers, they just went with the same option.
Yeah, I mean, obviously tyre choice is somewhat limited now compared to what it used to be. I mean, I don't even know what the options were. It was something like 30 or 40 tyre choices, I think, at one time for Monte Carlo. It was incredible. But the nice thing is we've still got that element of chance with Monte, where there's now the four tyre choices and you can make a difference. And what's always intriguing, as we saw about Monte Carlo, is that you can have a loop of stages and you can be on the right tyre for one and the wrong tyre for the other, but that can be the exact opposite to what your opponent's setup is. So, you know, something that looks like a gamble, normally at some point over the loop you're going to be on the correct tyres, aren't you? It's just a case of how long you're on that correct tyre for. And I don't think anybody really lost out or gained massively over the weekend through it. You know, we probably saw less gains by a risky tyre choice this time than what we've seen in other years.
Yeah, Trev, do you think there's also an element of that kind of throwing that psychological curveball of, you know, somebody looking going, oh, he's gone on something completely different, almost trying to put a doubt in the mind of the others?
Yeah, if you get away with it, which he did, then it's okay. If you don't get away with it, then you look a bit silly, don't you? Everybody else has gone the right way. We saw Sebastian Loeb in Catalonia last year go with a completely different tire choice. He went on hards, and it was the perfect tire for it. But that's his experience. And, he wanted to have a go at it. And he gained on one, lost on the other. So it didn't really hamper him that much. Interesting, Monte Carlo always throws up where you've got tires crossed, across the car, so diagonally, studs in one corner, studs in the other. Rye, have you ever driven like that? Have you ever, or how difficult do you think it would be to adjust to that?
No, and I was just thinking of exactly that when you said it. I haven't driven it, and I'd be intrigued to do it. And I get why it works with a winter tyre when you're not leaning on the tyres quite so much, but inherently, it still has to have an imbalance, and it must turn in slightly better in one direction than from the other. It's obviously a relatively new phenomenon, the diagonal tyres. I think it was Loeb that tried it first, and it obviously works. But yeah, I'm sure there's got to be an imbalance there, and it's got to take a little bit of getting used to. But it was clearly a clever strategy when I think it was Citroën that thought of it in the first place.
Jack, just coming to you. Is the Monty in Sweden almost lottery events, and the season really doesn't kind of take hold until we kind of get back onto proper gravel?
I don't know if I'd use lottery. I think specialist is probably how I would describe it, because I think both of those events you've just mentioned, we've had Monty here, which was won by 2.2 seconds, which is incredible in itself, and I'm sure we'll get the same kind of thing in Sweden, is usually won by 10-12 seconds. They're very close, but I think if what you're alluding to is, does it not tell us much about the rest of the season? I think you're bang on, because they're very unusual events in the sense that we don't really get any other tarmac events that are affected by ice and tyre choice quite as much as this one. And obviously Sweden's on the snow, so very different with the spikes on the tyres and stuff like that. So it's a lovely way to start a season, that we have two events where after the two events, we're still really not sure what the situation is with who's going to be dominating for the season, or if there's going to be a battle, or who's got the best car, who's the best driver, car package. So it's always interesting to see sort of Mexico time. That's where you can start to kind of get a feel for what the rest of the season's going to look like. But we've seen in the last couple of years, it's been such a yo-yo swing between different drivers, especially like if you look at Oit Tanak in the second half of last season. It's very difficult to tell where the championship's going to go until the last two or three events now, because we've got so many people who are so good and so many cars that are so good, so close together.
You took me where I wanted to go there. Right, I know most people would say Sebastian Ogier was probably the driver of the event, but for me, it was Oit Tanak.
Tanak, again, how many times did we talk about it at the end of last year? He should have been dominant again. His performance was fantastic. The car is clearly the best there, and he was brilliant. But you shouldn't maybe underestimate Sebastian Loeb either for the star driver. I mean, somebody who's just come back from Dakar, one day of testing, straight into the rally in a car he's never driven before, and he's sort of fighting for a podium place, albeit maybe not quite on speed. But I mean, I think that shouldn't be underestimated, to come in and take a fourth place.
Daniel Elliner putting serious effort in the gym as well just before it. I think that needs to be referenced. I think that needs to be referenced as well. But all joking aside, I completely agree with you. I'd almost say the Loeb effect was kind of under the radar a little bit, Trev, wasn't it? It we knew he was there, but the fact he wasn't fighting, but you look at the result, and it was actually, if that was somebody else going into a team first event with a day's testing, I think we'd be lauding it probably a little bit more.
Yeah, the only big difference this time was he wasn't fighting at the front in the first two stages, really, and he dropped back a little bit then. So, but you know, you get back up onto the podium at one point, and you know, just the performance, winning stages as well in that car first time out, it just again shows his class in an event like that.
Jack, we spoke about this repeatedly, and I've seen bits and pieces on social media, but excuse me, Andreas, it was a yo-yo event for him, really, wasn't it? Because the times were there at times, if you pardon the expression, and then a wheel gets ripped off and he's out of another rally.
Yeah, to paraphrase Andre Adamo, he basically said that he didn't mind so much that Mikkelsen went off when he's fighting for the front. So there's a bit of a step forward from last year where he went off when he was fighting for 6th, 7th and 8th. So a bit of a step up in pace, but still, you know, the two of the kind of key people we talked about before the season started was Andreas Mikkelsen and Elvin Evans, wasn't it? And it was terrible events for both of them. So definitely not how Andreas Mikkelsen will have wanted to have started the season. But, you know, as a driver, all you can do is focus on the positives, or that's all you should do. And I think Andreas Mikkelsen can look at his pace and be quite impressed. I don't think it's an event that is his forte. I know he won in WRC2 there, but I think when it comes to competing against people like Sebastian Ogier and Sebastian Loeb, I think Andreas Mikkelsen would be happy with the kind of top five finish there, really. So it shows that they were good to have Sebastian Loeb to bag some points, and Andreas will be looking to bounce back on the next event in Sweden, where he's won before and been very good there.
There was the jokingly been going around with regards to Loeb maybe getting a full season. Is there any truth in this, do we think?
I don't think there'll be any change in Sebastian Loeb's plans for the year, to be honest, unless there's a change with one of the other drivers in the Hyundai setup. So I think the only way if Sebastian Loeb's sort of season gets extended is if one of the other drivers moves, or if they make some big changes there. So I personally can't really see that happening. I think if Loeb had won, or if he'd have been first or second and then done the same in Sweden, I think they would have had a serious conversation to have in Hyundai. But I think at the minute, I think everything will stay the same. And what a person to have to be bagging your points, even if he's not winning rallies. I mean, he's a pretty safe pair of hands, isn't he, to be honest? And he's a good person to have in that team, especially where they suffered a little bit last year with their driver lineup and bagging consistent points.
I tell you what I found interesting. I'll come to you, Trevor, and I'll come to you as well. Right, is some of the interviews where Sebastian Loeb was talking. Obviously, you know, having a different mindset now. He's driving for manufacturers' points, and previously he was trying to win the drivers. So, you know, could we even say maybe he tempered his approach to this rally as well? Maybe he could have pushed a little bit more, Trev.
No, I think at that point he was talking about manufacturers' points, but had he been the sharp end over the first couple of stages, totally different proposition then. So I think it was just where he found himself, and then clearly you're going to be a bit silly if you don't bag as many points as you can for the team.
Right. If, and I suppose it is the massive if in all this, as ever we are hopping around a little bit, but if we can get, or rather Hyundai's management can get Andreas back on an even keel, we're back in the realms of who has got the strongest driver lineup. Is it Toyota or is it Hyundai?
Well, it's still an if, isn't it? I know Andreas was lying third, and he was at the sharp end, but it was still relatively early in the rally, wasn't it? And you know, it was an unfortunate mistake, but right on the flying finish like that, I don't know. It was certainly unfortunate when he was in a good position, but I think we still need to see where Mikkelsen's at this year. I don't just think it's a driver combination. I think it's a car and driver combination. And from what we saw in Monte Carlo, the strongest has to be Toyota. I mean, all three drivers, I mean, I have to say Latvala probably was looking at the stage times of the other two. And, it seemed like his body language was a little bit like...
Oh, the feeling was mentioned, right? The feeling was mentioned.
I know exactly the feeling was. And he referred back to his pre-event test, and he started with a car that was too hard, was it? Or too soft, I can't remember now. But even so, you know, you can change that during the rally, and surely he would have known the setups of the other two. So I think already he was looking at the pace of both Meek and Tanak. But nonetheless, the car and drivers, you know, do look very, very quick, and Latvala will be fast in Sweden. So I think, and not only that, they've got three full-time drivers, which obviously Hyundai haven't. So you still have to favour Toyota, I think, when you look at the performance from Monte Carlo.
Jack, again, we spoke about tyre choices, and it could have been a stroke of genius by Thierry before. Do you think this mixed lineup again by Hyundai could be a stroke of genius, or be a complete unravelling come the end of the year?
It's a difficult one, really. I like what Toyota do, keeping their consistent drivers on. I like that. I think it's good to have continuity. We always talk about this, don't we? And you can't really substitute getting experience of the rallies, the recce, and getting experience of the events and things like that. So I like Toyota's policy better. Saying that, bringing Sebastian Loeb in, it's not a bad rotation, man, is he, to bring him in and out. So I think both teams will benefit in different areas. I think at least Hyundai, I think Hyundai have got a little bit of flexibility with having Loeb and Sordo in there as well. And Sordo proved last season that he can consistently come in and score points on difficult rallies. So, you know, they've got good, you know, they've had, obviously they've made most of their choices for the year now. So they've already made those choices, but they've got the flexibility of bringing different drivers in, and maybe those drivers want to impress a little bit more. And, you know, especially Sordo probably fighting for next year's seat and will continue to fight for his seat the year after in most years. So, big opportunity for him as well to go up against his teammates and impress.
Boys, did any of you, we're going to talk about M Sport now, and we're going to talk about Elvin Evans first and foremost. Did any of you guys see the side by side of the onboard of Oit having his moments on the same corner?
I didn't know.
No, somebody run the side by side.
Yes, I did see it.
Yeah, and whether it's true or not, I don't know, because I couldn't actually hear the engine though. But the comment was, and Rye, you'd probably know this better than me anyway, but the comment was the difference between keeping your foot in.
Yes, I did hear the comment, but I think, in fairness to Elvin, he was further to the right and already further down the bank. I think Tanak was lucky that his line allowed him to keep his foot in, but Elvin's a very experienced driver, and if he'd have been able to keep his foot in, he would have kept his foot in, I'm sure. I mean, I don't know if you saw the clip of Ogier as well going off on a right hand bend and going off on the left hand side, and again somebody said, oh, you know, he kept his foot in. Well, he did keep his foot in, but he had no option. He was very, very lucky there.
Yeah, the footage
that word again, that a luck word, isn't it?
The luck word
keeps coming out in Monte Carlo, doesn't it?
It does, but you know, I have to say, we all know how these cars are designed and built, and obviously, you know, it's a safety cell and everything else. But I was surprised looking at the aftermath of the damage right to Elvin's car, and obviously, there's a moment where you've seen the door come open as well. One of those which was probably a little bit worse than what was first thought.
Yeah, and I mean, he obviously went into the trees, and it did stop quite quickly because he was carrying a lot of speed, wasn't he, into it? And like you said, when he saw the damage to the car, it was quite an impact. But at the same time, I guess it was lucky when I can't remember what gear he would have been in, but it was certainly sort of fifth gear, if not sixth gear. So it was a high speed off, and I guess ultimately, if you can go off in that sort of gear and, you know, you get out of the car and walk away from it, and you can still shut the door, and it's not all bad, is it? But it's one of those places, certainly, where you don't want to go off. But that's Monte Carlo, isn't it? It's not a forgiving place. The grip level's forever changing, and that's exactly what we saw on that corner. It didn't look like an icy place, but there was obviously some lack of grip there. And, you know, for all the gravel cars, whatever we call them nowadays, you know, they're going through 2-3 hours in front, and they can only give you so much information. So drivers are relying on the grip level being there, and it can catch them out very quickly.
Jack, we've got Christian Solberg coming up a little bit later on. He was working with Gus Greensmith since Finland in 2016, and obviously he's been a big part of what Gus's plan has been. But, you know, I don't say this flippantly, and I don't say this as you know, to mean any kind of disrespect, but what odds would you have got on him being the first Ford home on Monte Carlo this year?
Yeah, incredible, wasn't it? And also, given his experience on the event, you know, we talk about how important doing the Monty is for experience, and, you know, he's only done it in a front-wheel drive R2 car. So to rock up and have that kind of, I think there's a, I don't think I've really discussed this before, but I think there's a bit of a weight of expectation on anyone who does WRC2 now when you're competing against Cali Rovanperä, because there's this massive kind of level that you have to aspire to be at when he's around. And, you know, we saw him go off on the first stage, and, you know, he's quite lucky that he, you know, clipped Timo Sunderland's car, and there wasn't much more damage, but just a nightmare event for Cali Rovanperä, with his co-driver sending him the wrong way at one point as well. So Gus kept his cool under, you know, heavy pressure of competing against Rovanperä. Would have been nice to see a few more manufacturer entries to get a bit of a better idea of You know, it would have been nice for him to have a teammate to compare himself against, but all you can do is drive the best rally you can, really, at the end of the day. And, you know, he backed off when he needed to, and he pushed when he needed to, and there was some pretty special stage times in there as well. And absolute favourite moment from this year's Monty was Gus basically dedicating that win to Craig back home. And I hope Craig was watching, because you know, Craig's had a really difficult journey over the past few months after their testing crash in Germany, and for Gus to keep Craig involved, help him out where he can, and obviously, you know, dedicate that win to him was, you know, a really touching moment, I thought.
No, I couldn't agree more. And again, we're gonna have Gus coming up next week, and we're gonna be talking a little bit more about Gus later in the podcast. But Trev, the level of expectation, I think, for M Sport, you know, was low. I think they kind of wanted to go under the radar, but probably not this far under the radar, really.
No, and to lose your first drive, nobody wants to lose the first one, the first stage. So that's a real kick in the teeth when that happens. And then Elvin sort of fighting the lone fight, because Tiedemann struggled a little bit as well. He had the issues on the rally, didn't he? So, I just think that in Monte Carlo, Sweden is going to be different. Like with Tiedemann, you'd expect him to come to the game. But again, I watch this and I'm thinking to myself, right, okay, send Tiedemann to Monte Carlo. It's not a cheap proposition. So effectively, you're talking about a big investment, like hundreds of thousands of euros, to get him ready for Sweden. So what is the plan in Sweden? What does he need to do? What result does he need? And clearly, he's swapped management companies. He's got new investors now that have got a plan for him, which I have no understanding of, and I don't know in the bigger picture. But it just seemed a big investment to send him to Monte Carlo to get used to the car and the team, and really just to get prep for Sweden. Now, did that work out or not? I don't know. We'll see in Sweden.
Yeah, I suppose when you think about it like that, for me, I know there was a lot said about, you know, just getting used to the team, bedding in. But, you know, to do any rally in a wheel rally car, let alone Monte Carlo, I suppose it's cheaper than doing a long haul event. But I see your point there. But moving on for the rest of the season, right? You know, we're back in the realms of, you know, Tiedemann's got two rounds. We spoke about this the other week as well. Obviously, you know, Tino Sunonen and Elvin Evans have got the rest of the year. But, you know, I suppose those guys will be desperate to get back onto gravel and get, because, you know, like I said before, you know, Sweden is such a lottery.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, expectations maybe weren't high for M Sport, but you would still like to have seen them, you know, closer to the sharp end. I mean, Elvin's got the mileage, got the experience now. Sunonen, if he's the next hot finish property, then he needs to start showing speed, as we talked about. I think personally, M Sport were a little bit disappointed, and yeah, come Sweden, I'm sure they'll be hoping for better things, because they've done quite a lot of development to the car. We know they've been working on their new aero, and ultimately the only thing different to last year is the lack of a Sebastian Ogier. So, you know, they must be targeting better results for you know, the remainder of the year.
But anyone, a nightmare in Sweden last year as well. Absolute nightmare in Sweden. Timo Sunonen was the highest finisher. I think he was eighth or ninth in the order. So it's not an event they'll be looking forward to going to, I don't think.
Yeah, well, as I say, I think that, as ever, I think they need a result, don't they? You know, it seems odd to say that, but I think just for the confidence of everybody, really, is you know, a good solid finish by one of their drivers, I think, would be great. But, you know, Gus, fantastic. You know, I just wonder what odds, if you would have went into a bookmakers, you would have got on Gus being the highest placed finisher for M Sport. You know, and also, you know, seventh overall on Monty. I'm sorry I didn't have a bit of a wager, is where I'm going with this. But we mentioned it right at the top. We mentioned about Lappi's unfortunate debut for Citroën Jack. I suppose Trev will pick up on this in a second, but I suppose in their mind it was lucky that it was Lappi's car and not Sebastian Ogier's car.
Well, of course, you know, the eggs are in the basket, aren't they? And they're definitely in Sebastian Ogier's basket. There's no doubt in the mind of that at all. I thought Lappi was pretty good. I, you know, he's in a new car, he's never going to challenge Sebastian Ogier on the Monte, as far as I'm concerned. And I think to expect that would be a bit too much. You know, coming to an event like Finland, for example, yes, I'd definitely expect Lappi to be really close to Sebastian Ogier. But people are quick to forget this is, you know, Lappi starting his third season in the his third full season in the WRC now with a 17 car. So, you know, he's still learning some of the events and stuff like that. And I think Monte will be one of the ones that he probably doesn't favour so much. But before the issue where he clipped the wheel and then the engine problem as well, I thought he was doing okay. He wasn't a million miles away. And yeah, I think there'll be other events this year where he'll want to put in a time that really surprises people in comparison to Sebastian Ogier.
This is Absolute Rally. Whether it's the pressures of service or an issue out on the stages, it's vital to have the right equipment to hand. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for the world of motorsport and are being used throughout all forms of competition. Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Now, boys, believe it or not, we're half an hour in. We're probably about 5 minutes away from getting to any other business. But we mentioned him at the top because I mentioned the front page of wonderful MN this week. But I was genuinely blown away by the Power Stage. Did you all watch the Power Stage live?
Yeah.
Trev, I'll come to you first. Do you know, I can't remember whether it was Tommy Mackinnon, ironically, who said this, but... And it was going back on a VHS video from God knows when, but it was about everything slowing down. And, you know, it was that broken Finnish English about, you know, it was almost, you know, in slow motion. And when I watched the onboard of, and as I keep mentioning this, we've got Seb coming up next week. I can't wait to talk to him about this. It almost looked like it was in slow motion in the car, even though it was a stage of many, many hairpins. It just looked, it didn't look quick, and I know it is obviously quick because it's a 2017 World car, but it didn't look quick. It didn't look on the edge or anything like that. It just looked like he was just driving.
Yeah, didn't he do that? Wasn't Monte Carlo, Jack, a couple of years ago where it was the same sort of thing, and he won the Power Stage, I think it was Monte Carlo, wasn't it?
I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, he absolutely pulled a stonker out on the Power Stage, and he did the same. He'd been talking about it, you know, the day before, that he definitely had the Power Stage in mind. And again, Chris, Mick, if he's got the confidence in the car, like the 2016 DS3 that he had, then, you know, let's bring it on. And you'll struggle to beat him, apart from Tannock, of course. And it's great to see him up there, you know, first time in the car and doing that. I'd just be concerned about these wheels, and I've never heard wheels failing before, Ran. Is this something that's new, or is it just me that I haven't noticed it, or is it a thing, or is it not a thing?
Well, I think a wheel failure or a puncture, often the same thing, aren't they? Sometimes when we hear of people getting punctures, if you don't see the wheel, there's often a chunk out of the wheel. But I think, and I could be wrong on this, but I think when Latvala went off on the test, it was on different wheels, as into what Toyota had used last year. And I don't know if somebody hopefully can tell us whether they were testing a new wheel and whether they ran that in Monte Carlo. But I'm pretty sure they were definitely testing a different specification of wheel, which you'd assume was lighter. You know, if you test in a different spec, why? Unless it's a benefit. And you know, we know World Rally cars are incredible, suspension's incredible, cuts get bigger and bigger, and in those cuts tend to be rocks, embedded stone, sharp objects, and it takes a chunk out of the wheel and you get a puncture. As simple as that. So I think it's maybe wheels are built lighter nowadays for performance, and maybe the wheel gives way before the tire, but ultimately there's normally a reason for it, albeit we do hear of it now, don't we? Oh, I don't know what I hit, but normally there's a reason for it.
Yeah. Do we dare try and figure out time loss and seeing where Chris would have been, or should we just not play that game?
No, because attitude changes, etc. No, it's a fool's game.
Okay. All right. Okay. Basically, I'm a fool. So don't do it, Tony. Is that's what Trevor's saying in the shortest amount of words possible. Okay. I'll take that. Boys, we're now at the point of, we've done Monte Carlo. As I say to everybody, by the way, we always assume you know the results. If you're listening to us, you know the result, which is why we always kind of try to dissect it and everything else. One more thing before we go into any other business, folks. You will notice on last week's show, I mentioned about we've got some mugs left over from the competitions. What we're looking for, and Bertie Redfern's already done it. Bless you, Bertie. Thank you. Donate to a charity, any charity. We're not going to tell you the charity. All I want is a screen grab. Send it to studio@absoluterally.co.uk, and I will arrange for you to have a mug for that. For your donation to whatever charity you want to donate to. Just be sensible. Just it can be as much as you can afford, and I'll make sure that you get one of the mugs, what we've got left. And we've had a Bertie and we've had somebody else messages this morning. So if you could do that, that'd be really great, because once these mugs are gone, they're gone. It's a bit like the panel on this podcast. Anyway, moving on to any other business. Have you got any other businesses ready, boys?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, as Trev said, yes. And we're going to go to Trev Agnew first. Go on, my friend.
My any other business is great news for Irish rallying again. We've got Motorsport Ireland have announced a rally academy. So they have been investing through Team Ireland Motorsport. It's an initiative that's in its third year, but it covers all of motorsport. And the investment originally was funded by John Campion. But now we have John Coyne involved. So former national tarmac rally champion, John is providing additional support specifically for rallying. It's been established really to provide promising young drivers with a pathway really from junior rallying right through to competing at world championship level. It's a program for young Irish rally drivers and co-drivers, which is the main thing. And I think that's brilliant news to see that we've got a little bit more support from the island of Ireland.
Absolutely. We're proving financial support. What more could anybody signing up for anything like that want? Jack Benyon, have you got yours ready to go?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, just before I start, though, mirror Trevor's comments. And also for the Irish Tarmac Rally Championship opener, there's 25 R5 cars on the entry list, which is absolutely spectacular considering they had four to finish the year at the end of last year. So what's happened, I'm not really sure, but pretty much everyone who was driving WRCs or was having a bit of a rest last year has come back out and got themselves an R5, and including friend of the show, John Armstrong, who's doing some stuff with Dirt Rally. The car's going to be Dirt Rally sponsored, and he's going to be back out for the first time since 2017. So it'd be nice to see John back out. I'm sure everyone will agree.
An exclusive, Jack? Just an exclusive?
Well, it's in Motorsport News this week, so it's technically not an Absolute Rally exclusive. But I'm waiting for the real exclusive, which is when they announce that it's going to be a two-car team and that Ryan Champion's going to join John Armstrong in an R5 on Galway as well.
Are you co-driving?
Any chance, Ryan?
Well, no, I don't think so. Nobody's been in touch with me to inform me of that one.
I've got an exclusive for you, Jack. Right, Ryan didn't want to talk about it, but Rye will be doing the cross stages in a dirt rally backed Maestro.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so the Maestro is going to be liveried full dirt rally, and Rye will be out on the Maestro.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So, sorry, my any other business, that was a bit of a tangent. I'm going to argue with you all, or you're going to all argue with me.
Yep.
Because I think that was the best Sébastien Ogier victory of his career so far. And I'll tell you why. We've had Thierry Neuville lead in the Monte Carlo rally for the past 2 years. Obviously made mistakes pushing hard, trying to win the rally. But we've got Sébastien switching cars. We had a throttle sensor issue we've not talked about yet, which he employed some sort of fix, which was due to a sensor problem, but he reckons his throttle was pushing between 10 and 20% on. So coming up hairpins and things like that can't have been easy. So he was fighting against the fact that his car wasn't working properly. He was fighting against the Thierry Neuville, who he knew has challenged for the win on this event before the last two times in a row and was a very formidable opponent. And with all that pressure on, with just, you know, a couple of seconds between him and Neuville for the whole event, he didn't crack once. You know, we saw Neuville make that mistake where he went down the escape road and probably lost 15, 20 seconds where, you know, that would have won in the rally theoretically. And I just think all things combined, being in a new car with all the pressure on, everyone expecting him to do well in that Citroën, with a Thierry Neuville who's had 2 years of Monty experience running at the front under his belt in a very competitive car. And all the pressure that was on him, and the fact that he had that throttle sensor issue at the end as well. I just thought it was his. I thought it was summed up everything that's brilliant about Sebastian Ogier, and it's not talked about very often. But his, you know, his engineering prowess and his ability to get a car to the end of the rally is quite underrated as well. So I don't know if you all agree or if you think there's better ones, but that, for me, that was the best so far, I think.
I'm going to say that your love towards a Sebastian is changing Sebastian's now.
I was just thinking the same.
Yeah. He's going for junior instead of senior, isn't it?
Yeah,
because
yeah, yeah.
Getting on a bit or what?
Do we need some new decals for the C2? Is it going to be a C2 by Ogier now?
I think we touched on loads, haven't we? It was brilliant, and you know he's used to being time zones ahead of everybody on a rally result sheet, but now he's time zones ahead of everybody because he's come back from Dakar and he's probably not had any sleep and only done one test. So yeah, I agree with what we said before on though, phenomenal performance from him. But I just think that you know, I think we probably saw similar levels of dominance from Sebastian on Loeb on previous Montes. So you know, we could go back and talk about some of his best wins, but for me, just talking specifically about Sebastian Ogier, I think that was his best win.
You asked him,
I wonder what he'd say. We should ask him next time we see him.
Yeah, I think Rally GB, he definitely remembered that one last year.
Yeah, I think that was for the ceremony around it, wasn't it? And the, you know, the fact that they got everything done in one event and all that kind of stuff was pretty special. But I think just for pure driving purposes and actually winning an event.
I mean 2018. I don't mean 2017.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll tell you what, right. I'm not really going to dispute it too much, to be honest with you. But folks, by all means, you know, we'll put this out on Twitter, @absolute_rally. Was that Sebastian Ogier's best ever win? Ryan Champion, or any other business?
Am I not allowed to comment on anything that's gone previously?
No, shush. No, go on, of course you are.
Great news what Trevor was talking about, and I think John Coyne should let one of those young drivers drive his lovely RGT 911, because that would be good to see.
Are you a young driver?
No, I'm not Irish, unfortunately. I've got an Irish name. Does that count? You know, like when you qualify by a bit of... Yeah.
Anyway, well, champion's not Irish.
I think I'm a bit too old for that one, but anyway, great to see John doing that. Great to see John Armstrong back out as well. And interesting what you were just saying, Jack Bennion, about Ogier. The last stage, he did make some comment about made some temporary fix. They'd obviously made an improvement to the car, because to beat Thierry Neuville on the last stage, I think the car must have been better. But it was a fantastic performance. I'd agree with that. Well, I alluded to it last week, so I better explain this week. I am doing a rally. It's not Dirt Rally sponsored, by the way. But importantly, Jack Bennion is co-driving for me.
Wow.
So that's the big news. So Jack and I will be doing the first round of a brand new championship. So it's it's called the Bimmer Cup. It's really a budget championship for BMW compacts. It's an entry level championship based around a 318 Ti, all going to be identical, all on road tyres. Basically, you put a diff in them, you put Bilstein suspension on them, you go and do some skids, and the winner gets to do an event in Barbados at the end of the year, the winner of the championship. So it's five-round championship.
Geez, you're not going to Barbados again.
anything to get to Barbados, basically, is Ryan Champion's all over like a rash.
How much money does the government of Barbados pay you? Tourism. Yeah.
In fairness, that wasn't the idea behind me doing it. I'm doing it to try and promote the championship. But what is great about it is it's a budget championship, and there is no cost-effective rallying anymore. We know that. But there's a lot of these cars available. There's compact cup race cars, a lot of race cars around. You can buy one of these cars for sort of £3,500-£4,000 and then convert it to a rally car, and off you go. They're very, very strong. They're reliable. And like I said, it's cost-effective events as well. So I'm doing my bit to support this championship, because I think it would be it'd be great to see this championship get off the ground and become a regular thing.
Good man.
If I can do it, anyone can do it.
But hang on a minute, Jack. You've got a bit of kudos now, haven't you? Co-driving. You know, you've done the MN Circuit Racing Championship with superstar presenter Paul O'Neill. Now you're in with Ryan. You know, you've got that young co-driver swagger about you already.
Single venues are a lot different to proper rally, aren't they?
Oh, I tell you what, Brian. I tell you what, Jack, you will get hunted down by many for saying that.
No. I think I've made my views on this clear.
Right, okay. So just to reiterate, single venue rallying is not proper rallying.
It's a different kind of rallying. It's not through the trees rallying,
I'm just gonna let that hang. That's all I'm gonna do. Okay. I'm gonna go to my any other business. One of them was something that you're involved with, Jack, which we're gonna be talking about later in the podcast. Liveries. We said to the guys, we gave them some homework before. Boys, have you come up with a couple of favourite liveries from yesteryear?
Right. Yes. Yeah, I'm doing 80s, 90s and 2000s.
Okay. No,
that's very... Didn't we do this for Christmas for the quiz? I'm sure we did something.
Yeah, it was one of the questions. If I'm really cynical, I would say that's where Jack got the inspiration, but I'm not that cynical. Mm. I'm not that cynical. Have you got some liveries, Trev? Have you got some...
Yeah.
Okay. Are either you going to share them, or are you just saying, yeah, we've got them?
I'll use the same one I had before. I think Astratus and Alitalia colours is amazing. Belga Escort is fantastic.
Okay.
And Bertie Fisher.
Okay, the Tough Mac.
Good.
Ryan Champion?
From the 80s, it's probably quite an easy one, but I still think it's iconic, is a Rothmans Escort from the 80s.
No! Sorry, I said that out loud.
I love that colour scheme. You don't have to. It's my choice, not yours. From the 90s, I'm going for the Tortoise Lancia colour scheme. So Andrea Regini, 1993. And then for the 2000s, I'm going for the Red Bull Fabia livery. The Baumschlager Fabia livery is driven by Panizzi and Robin Perra.
Story that I read earlier today with regards to WRC regulations in 2022 going hybrid. Discuss.
How long have we got?
They're going to run alternative fuel through the service park then, right?
Yeah. They're going to flick a switch and run on electric going into service.
Motors through the service park.
Yeah. Your cynicism, I support 100%. Ryan Champion, what's your take?
Well, I think something has to come sooner or later. We're not going all electric because simply the technology doesn't exist. So if we can't go all electric, hybrid would be sensible. How that manifests itself, we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, the technology's there. It is possible. And it could be to boost performance. Let's not it doesn't just have to be about, efficiency. So, let's see where it goes.
Jack, what's your take, my friend?
There's a championship that's been sort of looked at the minute, which is, I won't say too much because I'm not sure how much is actually public, but like a cross-country championship, similar to like Dakar type thing, which is being discussed with all electric technology. So I think we're getting towards being able to do the distances and stuff and technology, and it will take a few tweaks from organisers and stuff like that to interpret it. But at the end of the day, I've said this to everyone who's asked me about this question, the manufacturers control where the top of the sport goes. They always will. And if they want to sell hybrid cars, then we'll have to race and rally hybrid cars. So they'll have to find a way to make it work, and they probably will.
It's worked really well with Rallycross, hasn't it? The move to all electric.
Boys, this is it for this section of the podcast. We're going to have Christian Solberg coming up very shortly. We've also got Jamie Arkle coming up, and we're going to have Tom Williams coming up a little bit later on in the podcast. Boys, are you all around next week?
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. A few different pieces coming up. We're going to have Derek Dornacy coming back, by the way, to do the second part of the piece that we started with him a couple of months ago. Check it out. Cool. Jack Benyon, go on.
Cool. I said cool.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah, so I've been speaking to Derek, and there's a couple of other bits and pieces coming up in this season, which I'm not going to announce yet because it jinxes them. But anyway, there you go. Right, boys, we'll be back with all you lot next week. Trev and I are going to be talking to Christian Solberg next. Then Jackie Boy Benyon and I are going to be speaking to Jamie Arkle, and I'll be coming up with Tom Williams at the end of the podcast.
This is Absolute Rally. Ireland's leading commercial note supplier, Killian Duffy, has joined forces with 2016 British Rally champion Craig Parry to form On The Pace Note UK. For more information, visit the website onthepacenote.co.uk.
Welcome back to the next section of Absolute Rally. Obviously, winners, competitors, and everything else from Monte Carlo. We're all involved with testing this week. We've got Seb Marshall, who's going to be with us next week. We've also got Gus Greensmith, who had a fantastic result. Obviously, friend of the show, been our man in WRC2 now for the last year or so. But he surrounded himself with a great team of people, and obviously he had his ice crew out there, and he's also been mentored and coached by friend of the show, he's been on before, Christian Solberg, and I wanted to welcome him back once again. Christian, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Thank you very much.
It's good to be back. It's good to have you back. Trevor Agnew's with us as well. And I thought it was a really interesting piece because Gus had this fantastic result. Many would say it's been coming, but Gus, you've been working with now for, is it 2 or 3 years you've been working with Gus?
We started working basically after Rally Finland 2016. So what is it? 2.5 years nearly?
Yeah, 2.5 years. Yeah. And you know, Trevor obviously is very passionate about coaching. He does a lot on that side. This is something which, you know, I see your Twitter feed and stuff like that. You're working with drivers all the time. When you get somebody like Gus, who is incredibly driven, obviously he's come through the karting world and then he went into junior rallying and things like that. But Finland Rally 2016, did you feel you had all the ingredients for a Rally Monte Carlo winner in 2019?
Actually, I did. Actually, it was first the 2 year rally coaching thing that we agreed, and I was asked by a third party to do this. So I really didn't know who Gus or Charles, his father were before the rally school, and I came like a total novice into the training. And from the first time I sat with Gus in the car, I was pretty amazed in his natural talent and skill. Obviously, I could see a lot of areas to improve, but the way he handled the car and the big cojones he had made me quite impressed in that this kid could be something.
Yeah, it's interesting, Chris, because I was with you. I think you came on the recce with Colin and I for Rally Radio in 2016 in Finland.
Yeah.
So you definitely didn't know anything about Gus at that point. You were having a chat with us about he is. How do you feel he's developed then over the 2 and a bit years that you've worked with him?
He has developed we had this plan when we made the deal after Rally Finland for the rest of the year, and then we, after the first season, we made a plan for 2017 and 2018. It's been going according to the plan. Obviously, there have been some ups and downs, but that's part of the time when you are learning and you are growing as a person. You face new difficulties, you face new rallies, things that you don't expect happened, like co-driver issues we had, unfortunate with Craig needing to step down after Germany last year. So all in all, there has been a plan, and he's really been working hard into these details, small details that matter. As you said, we have a great team. We have Antoine and Craig, the ice crew. There is Rob Wilson that is coaching him on his tarmac driving. And then I try to teach him on his gravel driving and snow. So I think we have a really good team, and I believe we have found a way that it works like it should for Gus, because he's the man we are working for, and he's the man we are trying to coach and mentor to be the next British champion.
Yeah, the British world champion, in fact. I think you probably go the whole way with that. He certainly seemed very disciplined in the early events. You know, he knew that he had to get the experience in events, and I remember that coming out quite loud and clear. That's something that we talked about as well. And now that he's pushing on a little bit, you can see that he's absolutely loving the events. Like Monte Carlo, when you watch him at the stage ends and hear him being interviewed, he was absolutely loving the rally, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was loving it. What's always been a strong point in his driving is his ability to have a quite amazing feel for different grips. So the grip level, especially like a rally like Monte Carlo, where the grip can change numbers and numbers of time during the stage. So that's something that surely played to his advance. He didn't have too much of testing. He had one day before the event. Okay, he tried everything possible, but just his natural skill is now proving after the basic work we have done over the years. Now the hard work is starting to slowly pay off. Obviously, there is still loads and loads of work to be done, so we can't get over our heads. But I think Papa Charles is taking care of keeping his feet on the ground. If I don't, if I don't manage to do it,
it's
definitely quite a strong wave every now and then to keep us motivated. So, yeah, it's an ideal place to work at.
Okay. Would you mind just for our listeners really trying to get an insight into how you go about making a plan with Gus for Rally Monte Carlo?
Well, basically it wasn't – Rally Monte Carlo was a rally where I was more in helping him on weather work. I was doing weather on stages. Obviously, I saw him doing the rally and it was all basically just trying to see how he is talking before the rally and in service when I was managing to be in service after the days. And it was just an easy event. His head was absolutely perfect. His mind was there all the time. He was really relaxed. I think he slept, the nap? Yeah, during daytime before the rally, what he has never done. Which gave me the feeling that he's really confident in, you know, all in all. Even if he had the new co-driver, Elliot Edmondson, still, it just clicked in Rally Monte Carlo. And then he had got these good results. When he needed to push, he was able to push. And when he wanted to back off due to the conditions, he was able to do that. So he was just on top of his game in that rally, which for me was by far his best overall result. Like you said, it's been coming for a long time and now finally it all clicked and he made me so proud. I was actually in the airport going home and waiting on the airport for him to finish the stage. And I'm 40, but he, the emotions came, which is pretty silly as a man, but you know, when you live with the emotion and the effort we all have put into it, especially him, it just comes out and you just need to enjoy the moment.
It proves that you care, so emotion's good. I don't mind that at all. Looking forward then, I know his favourite rally and he absolutely loves going to Portugal. Different proposition this time, of course, in the World Rally Car. Again, would you mind sharing what the plan is for that or have you made one yet?
I don't think there is any plan. Basically, he's going to have a day of testing. He did one day or half a day or whatever it was end of last year, and I think he's going to have a one day test. Like you said, it's a rally he loves. He's always been really strong there, so I know his only ambition and only will is to prove a point, but obviously we also need to be realistic. So if he manages to first of all finish the rally without any mistakes, have good stage time, consistent stage times, improving his result through the rally, I would be more than happy. But I know he's going to be willing to be the best British driver, which is going to be quite a strong target, obviously, with Chris Meek and Elfyn Evans being there. But, you know, you need to set your targets quite high when you want to be the best. And I'm sure he wants to come out of the starting box on a strong result and show everyone what he can do in the World Cup.
Absolutely, absolutely. One thing I wanted to ask you about, Christian, just as much about general coaching as opposed to anything else. There always seems to be a bit of a rush to get drivers into in R5 cars at the moment. R5 is obviously the most popular category around the world, but Gus, I know quite categorically was stopped from going into an R2 car initially when he first came out of the junior rallying. He was directed very much to an R1 car. He worked with the R1 car. Then he graduated to the R2 1600 naturally aspirated. Then he went to the R2T. And now we find him in an R5 car. Now, I guess it can be horses for courses, but do you think that some drivers can sometimes be a little bit rushed into perhaps getting an R5 car before learning these other, you know, smaller front-wheel drive cars?
Actually, that's too often that's happening. And in my point of view, what we did or what they have done with Gus is the only way you should do it. You should, you know, if you're 15, 16, 17, you should not rush yourself. Even if you have the talent, rush yourself to an R5 first you need to learn the basics. So I always have the saying with the drivers I teach, first you need to start to learn how to walk before you can start to run. And that's absolutely the same in rallying. First you need to learn the basics. When you learn how to drive fast and keep the speed with a car that hasn't got the horsepower and the technology, it's quite easy then to step up to R2 and R5 and whatever the way is you're going to do it. But, you know, first learn the basics, save the money. When you have the experience and you have done the hard work, I think it's fairly easy then take the steps naturally.
And get some coaching, of course.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. Anyone who wants to get good coaching, you know where to reach me.
Well, I was just about to take you there. I was just about to say, what's the best way of getting a hold of you, Christian? And what's the is it a website? Is it? I know you've got a website. Obviously, you're available on Twitter. If somebody is interested in coming over and working with you, what's the best way of getting in contact?
I think at the minute the best way is either Facebook. I have there a page for Christian Solberg Coaching, and then in Twitter I'm quite active, obviously. I don't have my personal Facebook account anymore, but yeah, Christian Solberg Coaching in Facebook is a good way, and Twitter.
Fantastic. Listen, Christian, I really appreciate giving us a little bit of time. As I say, we're going to have Gus coming up next week, but I wanted to speak to some of the guys behind the scenes, so I appreciate your time today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure as well.
This is Absolute Rally.
Absolute Rally continues to be partnered by the Kielder Works team, who remain fully committed to the sport and are pioneers of the latest technology. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for all forms of competitive action.
Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
And welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. It's been a busy old show. It was going to be a hell of a lot busier. Obviously, we made reference to the fact that some of the guys we were hoping to get from Monte Carlo were all tied up with tests. So next week, we're going to have Gus Greensmith, Seb Marshall, and Tom Williams, who is out doing the Arctic Rally in preparation for his Junior World Championship assault coming up this season. Obviously, second season in, him and Phil Hall returning to the Junior World Rally Championship. So we're going to be talking to him about that next week. A couple of things I wanted to do just for admin purposes. The guys who have emailed in with regards to the offer we put out with the mugs, obviously I think we've got probably about 25 mugs left, believe it or not, from the two competitions that we ran. We've done this thing with regards to a charity donation if you send us a screen grab. To the guys that have done it so far, Bertie Redfern, I think I mentioned before anyway in the podcast, but Mike Shannon also, and is sent in a screen grab of something that he's done as well, and we're going to be getting a mug out to him. Now, this doesn't mean you've just got to be in the UK to do this. We will get mugs out here wherever you are, because if you're good enough to do it, we'll find a way, I promise you. And as I keep talking about, once these mugs are gone, they're gone. We don't know what we're going to do next. We will do something from Dan with the Terrors, because it's cool. It's just cool, isn't it? The stuff he does is just brilliant. So we will do something with Dan, and we'll do something else with Kielder. Again, obviously, this season we are back with Kielder. We wouldn't be here without them, and we're also supporting On the Pace with what Craig Parry's doing in the Welsh Championship and everything else. Of course, you know, it feels like a bit of a Gus Greensmith tribute this week. Of course, Craig Parry was part of his gravel crew, part of his crew, obviously until that very unfortunate accident. But this is Craig's new venture, and we're supporting him and Killian Duffy any way we can to get them started. But there you go. Listen, folks, I hope you've enjoyed the podcast this week. And yeah, as I say, we've got lots of people coming up next week. They've got a little bit of downtime after the Swedish test. So we're going to try and get as many people as we can in next week. We're going to have the second section with Dirk Dornacy coming up probably the next 2 to 3 weeks. So if you've not checked out the first episode, which was pretty much all about his time with Mitsubishi and the WRC program and everything else, go and seek that one out. It's a cracking episode. But to come up to speed, it's the period of time now where he's got involved with Ken Block and what's coming up with Ken and the Gymkhana stuff and everything else. And yeah, it's going to be a great episode. As I say, Derek's very, very candid, very, very open and honest with some of his stories. And yeah, if you are still downloading the episodes, and we still see the downloads happening, by the way, which is brilliant, really, really appreciate it. If you are enjoying it, please spread the word, tell your friends and everything else. You know where we live now. I always say this, but it's @absolute_rally on Twitter, facebook.com/absoluterally. And of course, you can log on and find the old episodes. You can use the Podbean app, or you can use
iTunes, or indeed click onto the website, and it's absoluterally.co.uk, and there's always a little cheeky image whoever's been on the podcast that particular week as well. But we will be back same time, same place, in your little podcast hole next week.
Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.